Hello, this is a special episode of Curious Leadership. This is a live panel discussion, which we hoped would become a podcast episode, and it has. So this is it. We weren't going to do the summit, the client summit, focused on AI 3 months ago. It was going to be about sales and marketing. But so much has happened in the last 3 months that not only has it overtaken many of our client businesses, but it has overtaken our event. And this panel discussion is for entrepreneurs. This is what's happened in their business in the last 3 to 4 months. This is stuff that they're talking about that wouldn't have been possible 6 months ago. These are not super technical people. These are the leaders of real businesses growing really fast. Some of them have just raised money. Their main business is not AI, but this is the impact that AI is having in their business today. So this session got some of the most positive feedback on the day from the 35 CEOs and entrepreneurs in the room. You should listen. It'll be great. You'll enjoy it. You'll get loads out of it. Comments down below if this is on YouTube.
I'm Neil Marley. I'm the CEO at Neologic. We're an AI company with a platform and consultancy business that helps organizations automate documents and workflow. We have no pricing. Thanks, Vern. And we focus on the key constraint. I'm learning a lot today. That's good. So the website's just changed.
But 3 months ago, the business was called?
Qualify.
And what did you do?
It was 6 months ago, but we started off the business in training early career people in technology. And about a year ago, we wrote our first virtual mentor tutor with an LLM, and it completely blew me and my CTO away. So we decided that actually the future is going to be less early career roles for a start, more use of AI. So we built an entire platform to take advantage of that opportunity. So we completely pivoted the business, which has been a good thing.
Okay, brilliant. Thank you.
My name is Kevin Bradley. I'm the CEO of Amegro. Amegro is a portfolio of software businesses within Constellation. So Constellation is a serial acquirer of vertical market software businesses on the Toronto Stock Exchange. And I have a portfolio of 39 software businesses within Constellation.
And I am Pedro. I am the CEO and founder of Pago. We do facilities management. It's a facilities management platform. I've tried to explain this in many different ways, but I think Dom summarize what the business does very well. We're trying to do for commercial cleaning and facilities management what Uber did for driving. So empowering people to earn more based on their personal productivity metrics. And it's a difficult market to disrupt because you need not only to connect the end user or the client and the people available to do the work. Most importantly, you need to throw in there an asset, which is a building that has requirements that you need to infer the need for services in real time based on things like utilization, on lift moves, or customer feedback in real time.
Thank you.
I'm John Redman, founder and CEO of a business called Modo25. We're a digital marketing agency helping global brands with their SEO, PPC, and all that sort of stuff. But off the side of that, we've spun out an AI analytics platform called AskBosco, and we help brands and agencies connect all their data together, let them talk to their data using generative AI, but then predict using our own AI exactly where they should spend their money.
Spend the next dollar. Fantastic. Pedro, what has been the biggest impact, recent impact in terms of, other than trying to kill yourself with a router, what in terms of AI, what's been the impact on your business?
So we started the business about 3 or 4 years ago, and I was told by everyone I had to build a tech team. So I build a tech team with traditional software developers. I have people ex-IBM, ex-Google, ex-CTOs. Build a very traditional tech team with front-end developers, back-end developers, middleware, and then there's the tech lead, and so on and so forth. So I have 11 developers across multiple functions, and they were producing product, let's say, at a rate of a feature per sprint, which is still the old school sprints of 2 weeks. And in parallel, for completely different reasons, I hired a different guy who has very limited understanding of software. He's curious about software, but he's not an expert in any way, and he hasn't worked with software for a long time. but he has a bachelor's in English literature. But what he is very curious about all things, and he started trying AI and building little applications in-house that he could ask different AI tools to code. And what's dramatic for me as a CEO who's trying to put together a team that works is that this guy nowadays, 3 months in, produces more product features than the entire 11-person team together. And they are not of a worse quality. Just because he knows how to verbalize the problem and the solution he wants and explains it to the machine. And then he has virtual coders developing throughout the night whilst he's asleep.
And how many features has he shipped?
He's shipping an average of 3 features a week. But because not only he's doing that, so head of product, but he's also the COO, responsible for customer success and implementation. So it's not a full-time job.
Part-time shipping 10x more than the team. Okay. John, what's the impact of AI in the productivity in your business?
So we did 2 things. We did because we're an AI business. AI, I've been doing this for 6-7 years. It was a nightmare 6-7 years ago. Nobody was interested in AI. We called it predictive analytics because everybody was scared of AI. And then ChatGPT came along and then the phone starts ringing. So that was quite exciting. But we did 2 things. We did so I made a mistake initially. I get excited about something, I'd email it to someone, go, right, you've got to look at this. It's going to change your life. And they just weren't interested and they weren't curious. So we put a cash prize up by team and said, right, you've got to record yourself on Loom doing something using AI in a safe way. So we put an AI policy in place. They all got trained on it. And you've got to show us what you're doing to save time for yourself or save time for your clients. And we also do a 4-day week. So for me, this is really important that they're super efficient. So they all recorded stuff. They sent it to me. We scored them and then people won by team £250. And that worked really well. The best one was one of our grads who said, I use AI to reply to John's emails so I don't sound stupid, which I thought was quite sweet. She doesn't sound stupid. She's super smart. But so that was about 2 years ago when it all started going. And then recently we've set up an AI task force, which is now a volunteer-based thing, where it's like, well, you volunteer, you join the task force, we're going to invest in training, in technology, and then you're going to help us fix all the little lumps and bumps in the business in a similar way to what you're doing. So that's what we're doing to try and sort that out.
Fab. Kevin, you've got a task force inside your business, haven't you?
We have. So across the Volaris is part of the group that I'm in. So we would have a couple of hundred software companies within that. And we had varying levels of interest in AI, depending on those teams, maybe a perception of that business, if it was going to impact their markets or not. Generally, in everything we do, we're very decentralized. We don't rebrand the businesses we acquire. We try not to change the teams. We try and share best practices, optimize the business and help it to grow. And AI is one of the few things we've tried to bring more central. And it was really to try and have a small specialist team that could learn faster, run faster, and then share those learnings with the wider community. So a few things we've tried to do is a general knowledge program to try and sort of lift the base knowledge of all our businesses. Any of those companies that have that interest and are sprinting themselves, we'll try and give them help if they can, but also then to have a central team because of the pace of change. Or businesses are struggling to keep up themselves, and to have that people that had the person that was recruiting into this team describe it as the 10,000 hours and say, we have to be respectful of the 10,000 hours and do people have experience of AI or are they enthusiastic amateurs? And our fear was that we had a lot of enthusiastic amateurs and we need to get some expert resources here. Some applications that could be applicable to everyone if that worked, sort of learning programs. And we've used it to change some behaviors then as well. So one of the examples we had was teams that felt AI is not relevant to my business or it's not really going to impact my industry. And I think for us, we feel it's going to impact everyone. One of the key constraints we find, we tend to have mission critical specialist software. A common challenge we get from our leaders is it will take me 9 to 12 months of training before I can put a developer onto a product, before they could release new software, before even a professional services team could be billable to a customer. We have people hired into that AI team that are outputting things after 1 or 2 days. You know, so that's one of the things that's really been transformational for us is the pace of onboarding and the pace of the output there too.
And you told me an interesting story about one of your business unit leaders who thought it wouldn't change his life. What did the team do to him?
So we did have in one of our groups, there was a business unit leader who felt that AI was not relevant to him or to his industry. And I think his manager had a different view, shall we say, who was an AI enthusiast. So he spoke to that centralized team and then wanted to run a task to try and build a competitor product to that company. And they did that, I think it was in 17 days. And then at a future conference of all our CEOs, they presented the competitor to the guy that thought AI was not relevant to his industry. And they had used AI tools to map what was going on in the sector. They had gone out and spoken to customers. They hadn't spoken to that team at all. And an AI team that knew nothing about the sector built an MVP product within two people, 17 days.
And how close to production did you think it was?
They thought it would take another 6 months of full testing before it was something you would put out there.
Yeah.
But what we're competing against is a product that's been developed probably over 10 or 15 years.
Yes. One of your biggest challenges is technical debt. So as a working example, it shows how in 6 months, 9 months, you could unwind all of that technical debt.
And the way the user was interfacing with the software was completely different as well. They had it running through voice interaction. And it was software for housing associations or rental markets. So you could speak about clients that were in arrears, send them a letter, what's my worst offenders? And it was running through voice prompts, which the main software didn't do, which would have been very appealing to the end customer.
Very good. Neil, what sort of projects, now that you've pivoted, what sort of projects are you delivering for people?
Yeah, and just before I get onto that, I completely echo the comments about speed. We built our first MVP in 2 days, you know, and it was good enough for me to go and demo to prospects. Very openly, this is not live yet. We've just built this. This is the idea we've had. And people, I want that. So you can get from zero to a proposition. It's much, much easier to sell that if people can see what it's doing. I sat in a room with a whiteboard and then the guys took it away. We put it into Figma, use Cursor. There's your front end has been created. The back end wasn't there, but it was just you can start to visualize things. And that makes team communication remarkably easier, because historically you spend weeks and weeks developing something and then it pops out, even with agile methods, and it's still not what you expected. So the speed and iteration speed of what you want, that was the first thing. And then the app dev, very similar to you, I think, in terms of metrics. I used to run an app dev business and it is 10x faster, I think, the throughput. So skilled people with, you know, logical brains, the ability to construct good prompts and good outputs are, I think, the future, as opposed to people who just can code well. So that's definitely been true. And in the projects, then we've developed the platform, and we've just seen the productivity go from weeks to minutes. It's quite remarkable. So one of the projects we've done is with a consultancy who do FTSE 100 board evaluations. Every 3 years, they go in and evaluate a board and do the governance. And there's 3 years of board papers, there's interviews with all the board members, there's a whole bunch of information. There's a report, relatively structured in terms of sections, and that takes a few weeks to produce. And we put that into our platform and it's 5 minutes and it's done. And it is 80%, 90% good. So then we got AI to compare the version that they created with our version. And we were better in some areas and worse in some areas, but there's a good equivalence. So you're taking significant amounts of time out of process. And I see that being across industry, across function, across geography, the ability to eliminate boring stuff, not to do things you shouldn't be doing. I think that's a really good point Ver made earlier. But where you are automating things that are core to your business, there is so much potential.
There's clearly an alignment of very few people's in the industry. I think this will start growing, where you can immediately see someone who's already lifted the veil of what's coming. And they can very quickly communicate with one another, which is quite exciting to see. I just wanted to mention a very important point and then tell you about why this is not all good news. The important point is the first thing that happens is your traditional tech team and your compliance team and your clients start going like, oh, but that's going to introduce bugs. And AI is terrible at spotting bugs. And how are you going to do quality assurance of all of this software? And to SpaceX's operating motors, it doesn't really matter because you are iterating so fast that even if you create a whole lot of features that are buggy and don't work, it's still much faster than trying to do everything perfect from day one. So it doesn't matter. Yes, we will blow up a lot more rockets or a lot more features, but we will still, as a whole, be a lot more efficient than we used to. The really difficult challenge that I would love to ask your opinion about how you solve this, then the wider room, is it then becomes a massive civil war in-house. So if my job is to build a team, all of a sudden I've introduced a tool or someone in the team introduced a tool that makes half the team feel like they are outdated, not wanted anymore, jobs at risk, people no longer value my skill set. And whilst in traditional evolution of companies, you have the time to adapt the team to new realities, this is happening overnight. All of a sudden, you may find out you have a workforce which is largely inadequate to the new tools that are available in the market. And how do you pivot the mindset of that team without completely destroying the company culture is something I haven't figured.
And Kevin, we've talked about this a bit because that you've got that challenge across, you know, the 40 businesses you manage. And we talked about the people who have a mindset for AI and the people and your dev teams who often don't. What have you been able to pull together?
I would say at the moment, it's a challenge we're identifying rather than a solution we've found. But some of our best developers are in that role because they know the code so well. They know every line of code. And if you explain a problem to them, they can almost imagine it and they can answer it because they know that so in-depthly. And what we're finding, those that are most successful in our AI tools have to be less concerned about understanding every detail and more an architect that's concerned about the output rather than the steps to get there. So we're finding those to be quite different personas, quite different mindsets. And I guess the current challenge or question is, can you cross that chasm or are these two different types of people? So in that centralized team, we have external hires and we have some internal people joining it then as well. So we have people that are working on AI projects, are enthusiastic about it, and we're trying to see, can we have that conversion? And I think at the moment, it's about a 60% hit rate. So there has been some people that after 3-4 weeks, they've left the team again, where it just didn't suit them. One of the things we're looking at then, is there some of the profiling tools that we could determine the types of person or the traits of a person that would be successful. So we're always trying to find a data or something we can measure, as you know. So in that, I was keen to see, can we do some of the profiling assessments of people in the team that have been successful, ideally those that have not been successful as well, to see are there traits there? Because what I was curious for is to try and get some people not from a development background. To your point, if we know these are the traits that have made the person successful, could we then survey a whole business and say, actually, is it your sales team that's close to the customer? Is it your product manager? Is it your QA person? You know, is there somebody else that actually could be really successful in this team because they're more focused on solving the customer problem and the output rather than how the lines of code come together? So at the moment, I'd say we're experimenting with things rather than here's an answer. But it's that people challenge is one of the concerns of it. And one of the other reasons we wanted to have a smaller central team that ran faster to make sure we can see what's happening with the product. The other piece we think would serve us well is to have businesses that have commercially impactful projects completed. So we can point to that as to why we need to solve this problem and move quick on it.
Okay. So I was listening to Klarna had said they were going to replace all of their people with AI. And they use a platform. They're on the same platform as about another 2,500 companies. Klarna and one other company had gone for 100%. Listening to a podcast with one of the board members of that business, and he said, look, when people turn this on, they get about 20% improvement in efficiency. If they push a little bit, they get about 40% improvement of efficiency. And then, you know, they had two of the 2,500 who said, we're going to replace all of our people in customer support roles with this technology. You know, you've talked about maybe 60% hit rate with developers could potentially, you know, move to this new world. You know, you guys, I guess your businesses are new that you don't have any of those legacy developers in them. But, you know, what's your view as a panel? What do you think in terms of you know, how many people are going to be out of work?
Well, I have this conversation a lot with prospects and customers. So at board level, talking about the mix of human and tool, I think. So for growing companies, it's easier because you just don't have to hire so many people and you can then sort of resolve. For companies that are struggling, I think there's going to be significant cost cutting potential through AI that will resolve in workforce adjustment, as a word, as a way of phrasing it. I do think there's going to be a significant impact. And I think the issue will be in the intellectual manual labor jobs, as I call them, there's the ability for Gen AI to automate great swathes of that. So the people who are impacted, if they can't move up into a conversational, logical prompt world where they can start to get the tools to work, that's going to be a challenge. And I don't know what the answer to them their role is, but society generally figures these things out as we go through different revolutions. But I think it's got the ability to be quite profound. And we do talk about it a lot with the boards that we speak to and say, this is, you know, you need to think about how you message this and go through. It's not going away. So Gen AI is not, the box is well and truly open now. And so having a plan for that is really, really important. But like you, I think a lot of people haven't quite, you know, nailed the answer yet. But we definitely see it as a impactful change.
So when we first set up Ask Bosco, we sort of had this vision that it was going to be a performance marketing person in a box, and actually it was going to get rid of marketing agencies. Having grown and exited a couple of agencies, I sort of knew about that. That's sort of, I think, a little bit too far away right now. Right? Nobody's got the confidence they still want a marketing agency. Actually, our marketing agencies are now our biggest customers because they want to save time. And we are brutally having the conversation, you can get rid of this many people. Right. And if you're the owner of the marketing agency, they're getting economic squeeze from their clients to spend less. There's wage inflation and they just want to be efficient. If you look at the big network agencies, they're just laying off loads of people and trying to automate in the middle. So I think we've all got to be honest about that conversation.
What percentage of people can they get rid of?
Depends on the work, but it could be 30%. So, but you can get more, or you keep the people and you grow your clients and you grow your business by 20% with the same number of people, which is a nicer story.
Yeah, it is. But it depends. And that's a mindset thing, right? Because some businesses want to, you know, that they would rather solve an easier problem, like take out 30% of the people. Private equity love to do that. You know, when they say to me, oh, we're going to do this buy and build. No, you're not. You're just going to buy because you're shit at building, right? So you're just going to buy and then you're going to get five or six businesses, create enough value and flog it to somebody else.
The interesting thing, so we've just done our five-year plan. We've just raised some VC money and we had this conversation with the VC and he goes, oh, it's all right. We've done this many times before in SaaS. We've got the playbook. We know exactly what we're doing. And I'm like, you have no idea. None of us know what we're doing. And the world of what the playbook you used 2 years ago to go SaaS business is completely relevant right now. All right? And they just were sort of bemused, and I think they need educating and training about what is happening in the world now.
Yeah, I think on the SaaS front, it's really interesting. I'm doing a little thing talk tonight to some investors about AI and software, and I think the software companies, they start using AI to generate massive productivity gains, but then you look slightly into the future and you can see applications being built on demand by AI. And what does that mean for application building? If you look at ChatGPT now and you upload a spreadsheet and you say, analyze this, it's a very small example of a dynamically built application on demand. And Satya, Microsoft Satya, has been talking about this. He was saying a few months ago, will Excel exist? And will it just be an application canvas that you can build an analysis engine on? So when I look at the VC world and say, what I'd be investing in, you know, where is that going? And where the ISVs are trying to get down into data, and Salesforce are saying, I want to get into your data through Slack. I don't want you training your models on it. I want to own that. I think that's where that's headed. I wonder what's going to happen to the application interface when people can ask for what they want on demand. That's going to be. So I think the VC rules are up for renewal. I think
I was talking to somebody recently, and they were a user of Workday, big expensive HR system, and they said, "Well, we don't use all of Workday." Like, who's got a big enterprise? Most people have a big enterprise piece of software and they use a little bit of it. And so they use some Gen AI technology, coding technology, and within 3 months they had written their own bit. They'd written their own code to replace Workday and the entire organization because they only used it in a couple of pieces. The other thing which I think is really interesting is this Gen AI stuff that we're using, if you think about it as a SaaS product a couple of years ago, it would be $1,000 a user, right? It's an it's enterprise technology that's being priced at $20 a user, which means it's in everybody's hands. And so that is a massive, and that's a massive change. But Kevin, you've got all of these people in 39 businesses and you are conscious of the margin that you generate in those businesses. What's the view across either in your portfolio or Constellation about potential impact of headcount reduction and margin enhancement?
I think for us, what we're looking at are one of the key mantras across the group of companies will be about being close to the customer. And that's one of the things we think AI can't do. You know, so for our teams is to be close to the customer, to understand your market and the customer problem. And as long as we're solving those customer issues, we should remain relevant and be a role for us. It may change the roles of some of those individuals as to how they do that. But I think for us, what we would look for is to try and use AI of ways of gaining some efficiencies to allow us to further invest. We never sell the businesses that we buy, so we need to be looking at it with that longer term lens. And I think then to keep innovating, to keep coming up with those new products and modules is our challenge. And this is maybe a way to help leapfrog some of that challenge for us or technical debt we have in some of the businesses we buy. So that's another stream we've looked at where we tried to do a modernization project on one of our products as well, which can be a big burden on our teams. And if there was a way we could be more efficient there, it could be two things. It could do a big job for the businesses we already own, but it could be an entirely new investment hypothesis for us as well in terms of businesses we would acquire.
Okay.
So we're actually looking at what are the opportunities for businesses we own today, but is this a new investment hypothesis we could bring to market as well?
Changes your view of how to create value in the businesses. Okay, very good. What else haven't we talked about?
Data and governance and security. I think I spent a lot of time talking about that. I've been reading some interesting things about the various publicly available services, ChatGPT, but even the paid versions that you think are not using your data, and they are. And the sheer number, I suspect, is much bigger than anyone would admit of employees in large organizations using public services to transform confidential company information, I think, is a massive problem. And so the private answers are still very expensive. ChatGPT Enterprise is $60 a month per user or something, which adds up really fast. Copilot's $25 a month per user. So there's an inflection point there where how do you create a private environment which is trained on your information that gives you accurate contextual answers, which doesn't feed the AI monsters in the cloud with your private information? I think that's a little mini revolution. I think I spoke to a guy the other day called Noel, won't give his surname. And he said, I'm doing this, it's great. I was like, okay, we need to have a chat. This isn't great. You are just giving information to these models that can then be consumed by others in various different contexts. So I'm always a little bit surprised at this point still that people, I'm having that conversation, but it's very much a reality, the training of the employees to understand what they're doing.
Can I just ask something? Did you say that the ChatGPT Enterprise trains on your data?
No, I said there's Pro and Plus do.
Okay.
Can do. You can opt out. So the free version does whatever it likes. Pro and Plus, you're a bit scared there. Pro and Plus, I think Pro and Plus don't have a data processing agreement that we would recognize an enterprise for GDPR compliance and other things. And the Teams and Enterprise versions do. But yeah, I made the assumption that the $20 a month one would be, you know, okay.
The point about not having a policy and not paying for the right tools means that when Rob says 70% of employees in UK businesses are using ChatGPT or something else every single day, they're using the free one because the company hasn't given them any money and nobody's trained them on why that's a bad
idea. Or an alternative. Exactly. Yeah. Right. Exactly right. And it's too tempting. The alternative is too tempting, you know, to say, summarize this 100-page report into 5 pithy bullet points, please. And that's going to save me a lot of time, right?
So because I need to reply to an email that John sent me and not look stupid.
We're all a bit lazy when it comes to those things. And so I think...
And I'm an employee. Why do I give a shit about the company's data?
So exactly.
I mean, come on.
So I think that's going to lead to more enterprises understanding that risk and them creating their own models, which I think is an opportunity as well, because you can feed your IP into your model and make it unique to you. There's no point everyone having the same generic answer.
I think they're asking similar questions and getting similar answers. So differentiation comes from investing in your own model for your own purposes to create your IP-led answers that are unique to you.
I think the big thing you should all go play with is some of the video stuff. If you haven't seen the latest Google VO3 or in video that we were looking at yesterday, from text to video. So I think the big challenge a lot of people have done is they played with generating an image to do AI maybe a year ago, and the person had three fingers or four heads and they said it's rubbish, doesn't work. It's phenomenal. There was an advert on the NBA final all done by AI.
What we'll do is we'll tee it up for after lunch then.
Okay.
And we'll tee it up as we come back after lunch and play that as we come back.
Yeah, because you can go home tonight with a creative idea and type something into an AI and generate a video that you could use in production environment. So you don't need tens and tens of thousands of pounds in a creative agency anymore. If you've got the idea and you know how to prompt, you can generate production level video, which is just, I think, game changing if you're on a low budget and you want to do creative things.
May I challenge that?
What?
I'm deeply skeptical of that. I've tried a lot. I think you can only get reasonable results if you're parroting largely commoditized and widely available footage, which is not too different from finding stock footage. I've tried some creative ideas. If it was anything that is remotely unique, it completely goes haywire. It makes no sense. But
we can agree to disagree. The latest Gemini 2.5 and VO3 only came out 2 weeks ago, right? So if you've got to play with that, right, it's completely different.
We'll show that after lunch. Right, any questions?
Thank you. Dan and Joseph, yeah. Just a question on if you've got all the publicly available Geminis and Claude and all, what is then your tech stack, if you will, that allows your team to take code that is generated in those, or do you set up your own LLM for generating code and then actually make it into something usable? And how do you prevent hallucinations that then make your team rely on it more?
I think a lot of the stuff we were discussing this morning only works in a world where the change is compatible with the time it takes to change people. So you can find that a lot of part of your team is not suitable for the job anymore, but you have the time to train them. What I think is different this time around is that the change is so fast that if you're relying on the time it takes to retrain people to do vastly different roles, you're going to lose the train. So I don't know how to do that, because retraining really isn't an option. But also, if you fire half the team, forget the notion of building a team. Your scene of Top Gun would not work if half the team was sitting on the side. It just doesn't work. So I don't know the answer to this, but you're right. It's a massive challenge.
I went in lots of different ways with this, but we wanted to get the genuinely excited and curious people together, a bit like what you were doing with your task force. So. And then we're going to empower and train them, and they're going to work with their colleagues to understand all the problems in their teams and hopefully build stuff and hopefully inspire their team to come on a journey. It's right at the beginning. I can report back how we get on, but I think you need people who are really interested and excited and curious. I don't think you can take the horse to water on this one.
Okay, access to... Oh, sorry.
And I think I met a company the other day who works in a space, and they're the smallest player. They've got four bigger competitors. And I think in those situations, I think we're going to see the smaller organizations who are more agile, growing fast, able to take advantage of the change of AI, will massively disrupt bigger players. And I think it'll be somewhat, you know, carnage for the bigger players who will not be able to make that adjustment and that change at speed. So they may not be able to adjust that quickly. And with a traditional model, traditional processes to go into an AI, it may be, you know, we see every 30, 40 years, the constituents of the main the FTSE index and so on are all different, and it may be a point where they just get out disrupted. I don't know, we'll see, but I think it's a massive problem for a big company to change at the speed that's necessary.
Access to talent, how are you finding accessing talent, hiring people?
We haven't had a problem with it. I think just broadly on the talent and the learning piece, Gen AI is the most amazing knowledge democratization thing, platform we've ever seen in the whole world. I mean, the internet gave information to people through videos and documents, but now you can have a personal tutor. So you can be anywhere in the world with an internet connection in your natural language, and you can learn anything. So I think long term, I feel very positive about the impact on our planet, about people out there who may not have had access to education can now learn anything. So long term, good. Right now, certainly for me, I'm the tech companies, they have lots of people, lots of layoffs, and there's lots of talent out there in the market. Is it the right talent, the right people? That's individual.
Not so much of a question, but how many leadership teams themselves are showing themselves to the rest of the workforce how to best utilize AI? My guess is it's very few. So if you're trying to put together a strategy around AI and you don't understand it at the leadership level, how on earth can you do that? And from my experience, leadership teams are worried about the questions coming up, and the people on the ground are worried, do my leadership team know what's the capability of AI? And today, a leadership teams lack that skill set. I think that the last bit, just say in terms of methodologies to bring AI into a business. If we're familiar with, delegate to elevate, which is, look at your quadrants, take the things that employees dislike doing and maybe don't want to do and hand that over to an agent first. And then the next section, which is they don't like doing it, even if they are good at it, hand that over to an agent and elevate their skills up to the things that they are great at and do enjoy doing. And don't sack people because they're going to be your expansion for the future. Grow into your skin, not out of it.
We had a stat yesterday. It's 49% of team members don't believe that their leaders know what they're doing with AI.
I speak to lots and lots of companies about this topic, and I am broadly sort of stunned by the lack of knowledge. So I'm doing this talk tonight, and I've been told by the host not to go too technical. And I'm saying to them, yeah, but actually you do need to go a little bit into this. You need to understand, because if you don't understand what the technology, how it works, you can't figure out where to use it. LLMs are probabilistic for a start, but they're not 100% accurate. So you need to know that. It's a technical detail, but it's really important. So I think there's a massive opportunity for learning in the boards that I've met.
I'm interested to know, maybe survey, who wins the race in AI? You mentioned Gen AI, ChatGPT.
Does somebody win?
I think it's too early. I think there might be somebody come along that we haven't even heard of. And I completely agree about your disruption of the big companies. I think the Salesforces and the HubSpots of the world are going to get really disrupted. I think what we're already seeing in a lot of these things, you can go into some applications now, you can choose which model you want to use, right? And they, in their license fee, they've sorted out their fees with all the models. And I think that's going to be the evolution. From there, people will just get used to. So we were talking about yesterday, it's like Claude's really good at writing. Gemini 2.5 is really good at research, and it's different things for different things. So I think you need to practice and play and learn. There isn't one that's good at everything yet, is my opinion.
If I just may extend that, I think the future is domain-specific LLMs. So I think what's going to happen is going to be industry, function, geography-specific. So the data and the documents that inform that will be more and more specific. So I think you'll have a business and you'll have hundreds of choices. If you're working in oil and gas or retail or finance, you'll have models optimized for functions in those industries and you'll use those. So the people who own that, the data, I think are going to be the winners. Yeah, I think it's actually all these waves go through. Okay, it's very interesting. So Llama 7.4.2.1 is better than Grok Turbo Nutter at menu summarization or something. That is not the future of AI. The future is, how do I use it in a business to get outcomes? And that's where the domain-specific features will come in. So I think people who own data sets, who can train the models for business purposes, are the ones who are going to win, in the same way that the comms companies didn't really win the internet.
I was going to echo exactly what you said. I've been in very close conversations with SoftBank, and their take, after investing $100 billion into OpenAI, is that it's going to become the telecoms. No one is going to win. It's going to be a race to the bottom. It's going to be completely commoditized in 5 years' time. They reckon that the businesses are going to make money, to precisely your point, are the businesses who have proprietary data they can train internal models and features on. And that's where all the value is going to accrue to.
Yeah, I might just mention, always a book. But Dr. Feng Zhu at Harvard's got a book called Smart Rivals. and it's written for us, mere mortals, of how we can compete with the big guys because we've got the proprietary data sets in there. And Fortune then put out a list this week and said it's a little bit like the gold rush. It was, you know, Levi Strauss that won really in the gold race. And so they listed a set of companies that their specialty is helping firms organize their data. Because if you don't have a good tool to organize your own internal data that you can then put on the telecoms, that interface is, and so they listed like five companies that they recommended you take a look at. My curious is what are the companies you recommend that are going in firms have tools to get our data organized so it can be used then?
That's what we're doing, Vern.
All right.
My business. All right. So I think that our platform, exactly that in mind. So you can choose any LLM you want. The bit that really matters is what is unique to your business that you want to put into the models? Where's your unique IP, documents and data? So both of those. And how do you want to structure the outputs? The outputs are mostly documents or calls to a system. And that structures. Businesses need structure. So Gen AI is inherently unstructured. You need to provide the guardrails and the structure. And so that's our thesis. We'll see how we go. But I think the ability to not compete with the LLMs and the AI vendors and just rise as their capabilities improve, the curation will always be important. But thousands of these things will appear. And you can choose and manage for different people, different audiences, use different agents and different technologies. The input and output is the bit that I think is key.
I also think, and some of you will have played with this, that LLMs are still bad at predicting database type numbers because they make things up. All right. And if you want a statistical right or wrong answer, it's all about the data that sits underneath it and how you organize that data. And you have to build different models. And that's more machine learning. Another book that I think people should read is, if you haven't read it already, called The Coming Wave by the founder of DeepMind, Mustafa Suleiman. And it goes a little bit far about like wars and healthcare, but it's fascinating about how fast this is coming. And that's definitely worth a read. And it's a page turner.
Any more questions?
Maybe a bit of a non-techie one. Just thinking about the next generation, maybe going back to future talent. If we were mingling today with our 18 to 20 year olds, how would we give them a leg up? You know, what would we say to them? I found myself in a odd conversation with my niece recently about what I do and kind of this industry. And she was, mulling over what to do with her life. And I found myself thinking things like, become an electrician, join the military, do something with your hands. Is this knowledge work a bit precarious now? But I'm quite passionate about, you know, the next generation. So, what's our best thinking right now as to how to really encourage and lead them, especially women, into something meaningful?
Yeah, so I think I saw a really good post on LinkedIn from Cassie Kozakoff, who's an AI leading light. She talks a lot about this. And her answer is the one I would give, which is actually, if you go into college, what should you study? That was the question that she was asked, which made a proxy for that. And her view was the ability to form questions, philosophy, ethics, English language, you know, they're the skills actually that will be in demand. The expertise and passion for a domain will never go away. So if you're really passionate about the violin or lawnmowers or whatever you're passionate about, you know, then pick that as well. So I think her advice was, there's a very agile world. It's going to change a lot again. You know, quantum's going to come along and maybe change everything again. So being open to learning and recognizing that the path you're on certainly won't be the path you're likely on forever. Stay flexible, learn how to articulate questions and be passionate about an idea. And I thought that was quite good advice for someone at that stage in their life.
I had this exact question. So I've got a 17-year-old daughter. We were going to Durham University and we're in the car on the way up there, and she wants to do classics and philosophy or classics and ancient history. And I'm like, what on earth are you going to do with that? And she goes, then I might do a law conversion and set up an AI ethics business. And I'm like, fair play.
If I may add something to that, I have 5 times, not 5%, five times more children than most of you. I've got five children. So I've had to answer this question to myself a lot. And I'm with you. I think, first of all, well, to Neil's point, I think that is still a transient stage. I think for now, yes, but when you get general artificial intelligence, even the necessity to ask the right question will be largely superseded by AI. I think interpersonal skills and whatever makes us human will be incredibly unique and valuable in an age where all knowledge work is largely replaceable. And the other one, which I completely agree with you, is fine motor skills. Because whilst knowledge work is replaceable, as we are off today, I suspect fine motor skills, not doing this, but...
you've got some work to do there, Pedro, by the looks of it.